The Skiffy and Fanny Show is listener-supported, which means basically you guys listen and we feel really good about ourselves. But if you'd also like to help us a little bit, you can go to audibletrial.com/skiffyandfanty, sign up for a 1-month free trial membership, get a free book, which is pretty cool, and the bonus is that it helps us a little bit. So go ahead and check that out at audibletrial.com/skiffyandfanty and enjoy the episode.
It's one small step for man, one giant leap for mankind.
But the Krell forgot one thing, it. Monsters, John. Monsters from the id.
There you go again, always blaming me for everything.
Go switch off!
It's a trap!
This looks extraordinarily bad.
Commencing countdown T minus 5, 4, 3, 2, 1.
Welcome to the Skiffy and Fanny Show, episode 166.
Destroying Your City with Nick Sharps.
I'm Sean.
I'm Julia.
I'm David.
I'm Mike.
And our guest, obviously, is Nick Sharps. Welcome to the show, Nick.
Thanks for having me.
So really quick, you're doing a Kickstarter for a project called Kaiju Rising Age of Monsters. It's an anthology of which David is a part. So we're going to probably have him talk a little bit about what he's doing in a bit. Tell us about the project. What is it?
Okay. Kaiju Rising Age of Monsters is a 19-author anthology inspired by Godzilla, Pacific Rim, Cloverfield, all those sorts of strange giant monster type movies. We have interior art set up by the awesome Robert Elrod and Chuck Lukacs, who's done some work with Magic the Gathering. And we just wanted to celebrate what, you know, kaiju mean to the fans and sort of explore new ways to experience them.
And you have quite a few people in this anthology. I mean, we mentioned David, but if people would look at the list, there's actually a lot of really interesting folks in here. So you've got James Gates and Larry Correa, many other people. And the art is actually really gorgeous, just by the way.
Thank you. Yeah. Thank you so much.
It looks really good. And we should say that at this moment, the Kickstarter is almost 79% done. And it's got 22 days left to go. So by the time this goes up, it'll be like 17 days, and then you'll have $10 million in there. And then you'll have Guillermo del Toro asking to make a movie.
Hey, so, that would be completely fine with me.
Yep. He can ask you guys to write the Pacific Rim 2. So we can dream. So, okay, so what is it about kaiju that are so interesting for you that you wanted to do this project?
There's so many different ways to portray them, really. I mean, I think Godzilla's been portrayed in as a force of nature, as a protector of man, and as like man's greatest enemy. You know, there's just so many mysteries around them, and this idea of these things that are just larger than life, and you know. You can't stop them. You just sort of have to avoid them, or you know, you have to find some way around them because they're there to stay. Did it drop out again?
No. No, you're still here. Sorry. I thought somebody was going to jump in afterwards. Go ahead, Mike.
Okay, so Nick, I'm something of a Kickstarter addict. And I've spent way too much money on Kickstarter, and I'm trying to cut back. Why should I – do I need to contribute to Kaiju Rising, even though I've probably spent 6 months' worth of Kickstarter money in the last 2 months?
Well, that's a good question. If you've seen the lineup of authors, I think that's probably a pretty good reason right there. We have some amazing authors. I am just humbled by the the people that were willing to pitch in and just the enthusiasm that they've showed so far. I mean, I've got Larry Correa is one of my favorite authors just of all time. And then I've got some indie people that just blow my mind. I read Samuel Staton's book a couple months ago, and it was just so different, and it sort of turned the whole superhero tropes on their head. And so, I mean, we have great authors, which is one thing on its own. We have this awesome cover art by Dan Howard. He did an amazing job. And then if we overfund, which it looks like we're going to do, we're offering interior art. We have three more authors lined up to contribute stories if we meet their stretch goals. I think you're going to see some stories in this anthology that you haven't really seen before. I mean, there's lots of fantasy anthologies and lots of sci-fi anthologies. There aren't that many giant monster anthologies. And the coolest thing is that because the monsters are the focus, there's really not like this genre restriction. I mean, we have this Weird West story that I've gotten to read so far. We've had four submissions. One being this Weird West story by Ed Erdelak, and it's really great. It's a really fun story. I've gotten to read James Lovegrove's story, and it is the most English story you will ever read. Anglophiles will absolutely adore it. Then there's this Lovecraftian influenced story by Peter Rawlick, and it's just of all the stories that we've gotten so far, none of them are really even similar except for the fact that they have these unstoppable forces of nature in them that are all very unique and just fun to visualize. And that's why I'm really excited about this idea of interior art, because I think it'll make things really even more fun than they already are.
Julia?
Yeah, so you say you have a really wide range of authors, and I looked at the Kickstarter page, and it is very impressively wide-ranging. I wondered how you decided who to approach and what their reactions were when you asked them.
That was probably the most fun part of the whole project for me. A lot of these authors are people that I've gotten to be friends with over the last year and a half, you know, just sort of making connections through reviews and interviews. I sort of just set out to pick the authors that I thought could handle writing giant monster stories, who I thought could do it in just really interesting ways without, you know, they could show respect to Godzilla and Cloverfield and all that, but to also, you know, strike their own path. And some of the authors were recommended to me. And I'm really glad that they were, because they're turning out to be, you know, some of the more interesting ones. Edward Erdelak was one of the ones that was recommended, and I'm very glad to have him on board. And then there were a couple authors that we just set out and we were like, you know, we probably can't get these people. They're probably too busy, but wouldn't it be fun? Wouldn't it be cool if we did? And so, you know, just took a shot in the dark. And it just so turned out that they had time and they were interested. I was ecstatic to get Peter Kleins on board. We're hoping for a story from Jonathan Mayberry and Jeremy Robinson, but we're still very, very appreciative that they're going to be providing us with the foreword and the afterword. I think that these are two people that know monsters pretty well, and I think they'll add some great insight to the anthology.
I was wondering if you wanted to say a few words on how the editorial team came together, how you got all started actually working on the project.
Oh, sure. So the day after the fourth time I saw Pacific Rim, I was at work and just sort of daydreaming. And I was like, wouldn't it be cool to have this anthology. I got off work. I messaged my friend Joe Martin of Nine Worlds Media, and I was just sort of joking around. I was like, "Hey, let's do a kaiju anthology." And I, you know, I'm sort of a idea person. I get these ideas all the time, but I have a short attention span, so I never really stick with them. And Joe, bless his heart, took it for me being serious, and he decided to get the ball rolling. He contacted our mutual friend Tim Marquitz of Demon Squad, is his big series. It's pretty popular. And he also edited the Fading Light Anthology of the Monstras for Nightshade or Angelic Night Press. I'm not sure which one it is. And then he also just edited an anthology that I have a short story in myself called Manifesto UF, which is for Angelic Night Press. And from there, the three of us just sort of, you know, just became a group, just decided to start tackling these problems piece by piece. Of course, it's a lot. Our support network is a lot bigger than just the three of us. We've had help from a lot of different people. Abhinav Jain has been crucial in finding some of these authors. We have Michael Edstrom is the guy that made our video. Just all sorts of help from all around. It's really goes to show you what a little networking can do. And so that's really how our editorial team came into play, and it all just started on a joke, really.
I think what's hilarious is every time somebody types hand in the little box, your phone buzzes. It's funny. I'm sorry. That was really interesting, because when you're talking about, you know, networking to put this all together, one of the things that I think becomes very obvious with the second you go onto the Kickstarter page is how clearly, like, this has been seriously thought through, or at least it appears to be. Maybe, like, you're sitting in a basement somewhere and you're just, like, rubbing your hands and going, hee hee hee, or something, but maybe not, right? But when you see it, right, it's like the very first thing you see is that video, and it's got this beautiful, you know, this art of this ginormous monster thing on it with the amazing looking title. And as you go down, everything is so very produced. It's got these headings and everything. And I'm curious, you know, since you've decided to go with Kickstarter, I mean, how familiar were you with Kickstarter as a process for basically making a project happen? And were you conscious that visually this had to look a certain way in order to kind of draw the kind of attention you wanted for the project?
Well, with Kickstarter as a process, I've only backed two projects. There's been a million that I've wanted to, but, you know, college student, starving artist and all that. So really I know what a good Kickstarter looks like, but we hadn't really had any experience with running Kickstarters. We did a lot of work, research, really. We asked around. Matt Forbeck was a great resource. Brad Boyer, I think that's how you pronounce his last name. I hope I didn't butcher it. He ran two successful Kickstarters in a very short time. He provided some insight. I think he has a pretty good blog post up about it. And really, the Kickstarter page, all of that amazing work can be attributed to Joe Martin. He knocked it out of the park. When he shared the prototype, the rough draft of the page with me the first time, I was blown away by just the amount of work he had put into just making everything cohesive, and it was awesome. It was this project's just been full of these really cool moments, and that was definitely one of them. It was funny because I wrote up a lot of the document, you know, the intro and stuff, and some of the details, and then to see that with all these great images and put in this great format. And so really, I think Joe looked around and saw some successful Kickstarters. The Kickstarter that we were following really closely as we were preparing for ours was the Clockwork Universe, the Steampunk Alien Anthology. And we were really trying to see, what were they doing right? What might we be able to improve on? Because we wanted to put out a really professional product for Ragnarok Publications' first title. We wanted to make a good impression. And I think thanks to Joe's hard work, I think that we've done just that.
Julia, go ahead.
So I was just wondering, from the perspective of David as an author who was asked to contribute to this anthology and is writing a story, how's the process been for you so far?
It's been really exciting. I've backed a number of Kickstarters, but I've never been on the other side before. So I find myself certainly watching the numbers with a much greater interest than I ever have. I decided to be among those volunteering for some of the reward tiers. So I'm redshirting a couple of people, and I volunteered to trash the city of the contributor's choice. And so that added a certain spice to the writing process, and then I knew what my story was going to be about, but I didn't know where it was going to take place. I'm really lucky that the city, that reward got bought almost immediately, because I was thinking, well, I'm going to just have a placeholder city for the time being, but I didn't really want to do that. And by having the city locked in, it just suddenly it changed the nature of the story that I was writing. It sharpened everything up. So it was this really... I've never experienced something quite that interactive before as a writer, and so that alone was worth being involved with this. Never mind the fact that I'm writing about giant monsters, which that was the gateway drug for me to really all genre fiction. I've been obsessed with Godzilla since I was about 7 or 8 years old, I think, and writing my Godzilla fanfic back when I was 10. So this is pinch me territory for me.
I love that you wrote Godzilla fanfiction. That's like a first. I've never heard of that. I mean, it's got to exist, obviously, but that's really adorable.
Let's remember that this was the best part of 40 years ago, so certain aspects of fan fiction did not exist.
But you were doing it. So I actually want to throw the question that I threw Nick earlier, since obviously this is actually a really cool opportunity for you, David, because you're I think based on our conversations, it's fairly clear that like you love everything kaiju. You could probably wax lyrical for hours on it. But why do you like it? What is it about these films that is so fascinating for you?
They take on so many different shades and colors. I mean, there is the most basic fascination of watching really big monsters smash the hell out of stuff. Right? I remember my brother and I, we used to watch all the Godzilla movies when we were kids. And when we were going through all of them, we had this rating system that we knew it was a good one, depending on the amount of property damage that actually took place, right? Which was one of the fundamental mistakes of the Roland Emmerich film. Godzilla didn't smash enough stuff. What the hell were you thinking? How do you get that wrong? Something which Guillermo del Toro emphatically gets right. So there's that side of things, just the sheer enjoyment of the apocalyptic destruction. But there's also I think Nick was saying all the different forms where sometimes Godzilla's friendly, sometimes he's a menace. Seeing the way that fears are expressed in them. There was a book years ago which made the argument that in fact, actually, I found it before me that why Godzilla ultimately fails as a monster that has any connection with classic monsters is because he is so far above humanity as to have nothing to do with it. And I think that is so wrong on so many levels. He's not a human figure in the way that King Kong is, who is a much smaller monster, more like us. Instead, there's an embodiment of much larger fears. So Godzilla and company can be the fear of nuclear annihilation. He can be nature getting revenge on us. He can be, as he was in one Godzilla film, the embodiment of all of Japan's victims in the Second World War coming back for retribution. So there's this endless variety of thematic embodiments, incarnations that these creatures can be.
Leave it to David to be the academic in the group. Michael, I see you're bumping in. Go for it.
So, you know, I've watched kaiju things for a long time, most of my life, but I don't know if I've really read hardly any kaiju fiction. And I feel like superhero and kaiju fiction may both have the problem of being genres that are primarily associated with visual and televisual media. How are you, David, as an author, and you, Nick, as an editor, dealing with that difference in how the kaiju genre will be presented versus what a lot of people are used to?
Nick, you go first.
I'm leaving it up to my authors. I have faith in them. So far, from what I've seen, you know, they've delivered exactly what I was hoping to achieve with this anthology. I fell in love with James Lovegrove's Kaiju Red Devil almost immediately, to the point where I was already planning on getting a tattoo like the one that Newt Geisler has in Pacific Rim, but with our own monsters. I was planning on getting that in celebration when this thing funds, and I'm going to be getting James's monster as a tattoo, just because it's that awesome. So really, I think for the visual angle, I think the art will certainly help with that. But I'd say that even without the interior art, these monsters will be able to stand up on their own, really, because it really just matters what these authors can imagine. You know, people can imagine spaceships that cross light years and write about them. Then they can. I think it can cover monsters or just about anything, really. But I'm sure David has a lot more insight into this than I certainly do.
Well, I wasn't too worried about the sort of the scale of events and that sort of thing. From the sort of gigantic destruction I was used to writing for with the Warhammer 40,000 stuff. But one of the first things that occurred to me as I sat down to this was, what is my monster going to look like? And of course, like you said, the interior illustrations will certainly play a big role here. But I started from the assumption that there would not be any illustration. And so I thought, okay, whatever you describe has to be something that can be seen visually fairly directly. So monsters like Gigan or Megalon, for example, are incredibly beautiful things on the screen. Or for that matter, I'll set aside the Cloverfield one for the moment, but those ones, they look terrific. Like Mike, you said, they're visually, that's where they live. But trying to describe something like Gigan in a way that wouldn't go on for, say, pages and pages and pages, or the reader is starting to get very confused by the patchwork construction going on, struck me as that's one of the challenges that the written form is going to take. So I need to come up with a monster that the reader can grasp quite simply. So I'm hoping that I've been able to do so. Because the other, of course, giant monsters that we encounter in fiction, perhaps most famously, are Lovecraft's. But they're far more impressionistically suggested. Right? Not unlike what we get, say, with the Cloverfield monster, where you never really get a clear sense of what it looks like.
Very cool. Thanks.
I was just wondering if you could maybe share with us a little teaser of what kinds of monsters we might expect to see in this anthology.
Well, sure. Definitely a teaser. Would you like to talk a little bit about yours, David?
I'm going to keep my powder dry for that one, I think, for now.
You tease.
I tease. Right, but there's a few quirks that I want to work out on with him before I completely unveil him. So he's sure. He's not quite ready for prime time.
All right, that's fine. I can give you some of the origins maybe of the monsters. Love Grows Monster. I've already said it's called Red Devil. You can probably imagine what that looks like on your own. Then Edward Erdelak's monster is inspired by a Native American myth, I'm pretty sure is what it is. It's called Zoovitz, and it is a very, very interesting kaiju. And then I already mentioned that Rolex is Lovecraftian inspired. So there's that. I think there's going to be another story with a Native American inspired type monster. Actually, I think it's two monsters, same story. And then there's a giant hog inspired by real life events recently. And then the last one I'll say is that there's a story that's based off of, I'm pretty sure it's the Book of Revelations, but it's one of those biblical books. And that one's going to be from James Mazey. And, I'm pretty excited to read that when it comes about.
I'm guessing that recent events with the hog, are you referring to the radioactive wild boar discovered in Germany?
Is that like the 1,000-pound, or I guess it was more than 1,000-pound, it was the giant, actually no, that was in Texas or Oklahoma or somewhere.
Oh, because no, I remember seeing a story about this where they have wild boar issues apparently in Germany, and they hunt them, and the hunters get paid for the meat. But this whole profession is like under threat now because apparently the boars have been getting radiation from like Chernobyl, and they're like radioactive. But they're these huge boars, and you can't eat them because they can't be eaten. You can't sell the meat because it's over the legal limit of radiation apparently.
Oh wow! So,
yeah, I don't know how big they actually are because I never trust any pictures you see on the internet. But because they're showing him, and I'm like, that person couldn't even lift that boar. That's not possible. But who knows? I don't know. David, you want to jump in?
Well, Nick, you mentioned a little while ago that this was the maiden voyage for Ragnarok Publications. Did you want to say something about Ragnarok?
Oh yeah, that's thank you. Ragnarok Publications is the love child of Tim Marquitz and Joe Martin. And I know that Tim's had some trouble with publishing houses in the past. I'm not going to say any names, but I know that probably left a bad taste in his mouth. I think they're looking to do something really on their own. Right now I'm operating as a consultant of sorts. And they're out to put to publish some just really good dark fantasy urban fantasy type stuff. I know that they actually just released their first novella by, I can't think of her name off the top of my head, but it's called Nuclear Lulu and Apocalyptic Montessa. It's actually, yeah, that's what it is. And it just came out in the last week, and I'm going to get her name real quick because that might help. I ended up buying it. I haven't gotten around to reading it yet, but I'm pretty excited to because Joe and Tim have a good eye for talent. They did find me after all. And the author's name is Mercedes Yardley, and it's Apocalyptic Montessa and Nuclear Lulu, A Tale of Atomic Love. And this is the first Ragnarok Publications story. It's a novella, and you can get it on Amazon right now as an ebook. And Ragnarok Publications is probably going to do some really cool stuff. I'm glad to be involved with them. Dark fantasy, urban fantasy, speculative fiction, and supernatural horror. But I have a short story that I'm going to try and sell them that's sci-fi, so we'll see how it goes.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's interesting. So is this particular publication, are they doing much of their work via Kickstarter? I mean, obviously it's a new venture, so I don't recall if the Yardley, was that also Kickstarter, or is that just straight from in-house?
No, that was straight from in-house. Really, the big idea with using Kickstarter for Kaiju Rising was that to get the quality of authors that we wanted, we knew that we had to pay pay pro rates. We wanted to pay pro rates as well, to establish a good connection, a good relationship with authors. And so that was really one of the biggest reasons for going with Kickstarter. And we are considering other anthologies such as Kaiju Rising, but I think the more I press that issue, the more it drives Tim and Joe crazy, because I have such a short attention span, and they have all this stuff on their plate already. They're writing like five different books, and they both have kids, and it's a little bit different for them than it is for me at the moment.
Fair enough. So a question I would like to ask both of you and David individually is probably the most difficult question I think you could ever be asked for people who are both fans of kaiju films. But what is your favorite kaiju film? And you have to only pick one. You can't name like 16 movies, David. That's for you. You have to pick one.
Oh,
because I know the second he's gonna be like, well, I really like this one, but there's also these 15 other ones, and then these 19 other ones. No, one. You get to pick one. So Nick, what would be your favorite? And it could be like a nostalgia kind of like, I watched it as a kid, I still love it. That's fine.
Yeah, I think I'm actually going to have to take the nostalgia road, because as much as I love Pacific Rim and Cloverfield, my all-time favorite kaiju film is Godzilla versus Destoroyah, or Destoroyah, it just depends on how they pronounce it. I'm not entirely sure. That's the one that really stuck with me the most when I was a kid. I saw it like 100 times, and I'll probably end up going to watch it again tonight, because it's just awesome. I love the monster in it, and that's got to be my choice.
Excellent, excellent. All right, David.
It's so hard. It's so hard. I'm dying here. but with that gun to my head, I think I'm going to go with the original Godzilla. It's such a powerful film, and here I'm talking about the Japanese print, not the one with Raymond Burr inserted. It's certainly very enjoyable too, but the original version is so dark, so powerful, so utterly uncompromising I find new riches to it every time I see it. So I'm going to go with that one.
Excellent, excellent. So those are your two favorite films, and I'm going to hold you both to them. So you can't change your mind later, David.
Okay.
Well, that's not true, because of time. You know, people change their minds. So we've got about, as I was saying, about Julia is going to jump in, so I'll just say really quick. We have about 22 days at the time of the recording, so by the time this goes out, about 18 days left to go. So folks, if you're interested in the project, there's all kinds of different tiers of you can get, ebooks and hard copies and signed hard copies. And there are, at least at this moment, still some like red shirting available. So if you feel like having somebody kill you, it can't be David. He's set because his has already been bought out. But if you feel like dying in fiction, there's plenty of options left, at least at the time of the recording. So Julia, why don't you jump in?
I was basically just going to ask Nick to tell us when the Kickstarter officially ends and encourage people to sign up and talk about the reward levels.
Oh, well, yeah, that seems like a perfect opportunity. Go for it, Nick.
All right. Our Kickstarter will be ending on October October 6th.
My birthday.
So like you said, yeah, well, happy birthday on that day. We've got 22 days to go, and we have a bunch of stretch goals that we need to meet. Other than the awesome interior art, which I'm determined to make happen no matter what, the three really great semi-secret stretch goal authors, we have one stretch goal. It's at 17,000, at the 17,000 mark, but it's legendary. If we get that, then you guys are really going to have some added benefit to the whole project. Also, something that I haven't told anybody outside of our little group about yet, we are having plushies made of our cover monster, just as a cool sort of add-on type thing. I saw this girl because of a Facebook ad, really, and she was making Pacific Rim inspired plushies, and they are just adorable. I think I'm gonna have to buy Knifehead and Leatherback and probably Cherno Alpha too, but they're just amazing. I got into contact with her, and she's actually making a prototype of our cover monster, which we've taken to calling Cookie Monster despite copyright things. It's obviously not the official name. So she's making a prototype of him as we speak. So hopefully by next week, there should be some updates with that. But it's going to be really cute, and you're going to want to cuddle with it. So I'd suggest kicking in a little bit extra when that comes out.
I like how we're describing a giant, destructive, horrifying monster. He's cute and cuddly. You just want to take him home and just... Yeah. That's true, though. They probably have plushies of Godzilla, don't they?
Oh, yeah, I have one.
I bet.
Do you cuddle with it, David?
Well, is it Wednesday? No, it's Friday today. Sure.
Fair enough. That's adorable. Well, that's awesome, because that's actually something that's, you know, because usually all of the tiers are things like, you know, you get a book or you get like a bookmark or these kinds of things. But having those little extra add-ons, things like, you know, artwork or as we've talked, you know, the red shirting, or in this case, possibly getting a plushie, that is actually really cool. I like that idea a lot, because That's something that's more than the book. It's like a little thing you can have on your mantle that stares at you all day. It's a lot of fun.
And smashes your Lego city.
I hope not. Bastard, that's not cool. My cat would do that, because he's evil. My cat is my kaiju in the house. So he does about as much destruction as everyone else. So cool. So roughly at about October 6th is when the Kickstarter will close. I suspect, based on where we are right now, it's probably going to get funded, just based on the numbers. And hopefully you do meet the stretch goals, because there's secrets that are on the page, and I don't know what they are, and you enticed us by teasing us and saying, it's going to be awesome, and I'm like, what does that mean? So hopefully you hit at all of your stretch goals, because that would be really cool to see what else is in store. So just really quick, it may be difficult to give it the Kickstarter page, so we'll put a link in that, because the Kickstarter page is probably really long. But let us know where people can either find you, find more information about the project, or anything else you'd like them to kind of check out that's either related to this, or if you've got like a side business or something you want to tell people.
Oh, sure. You can find me on Facebook most of the time. It's just Nick Sharps. You can find the Ragnarok Publications website. It's just ragnarokpub.com. The Kickstarter would definitely be too long to say, but you can just type in Kaiju Rising in Google, or don't do it in Bing, because you'll probably get something else. But if you type it in Google, it should come up the first one. There's also a Ragnarok Publications Facebook page, as well as a Kaiju Rising Facebook page. You can follow Tim or Joe on Twitter. You could follow me on Twitter, but there would be no point, because I never post anything. And So that's you could follow any of us, any of those places, and you'll be sure to get spam updates all the time.
Definitely a good reason to follow spam. Awesome. Well, okay, so we'll make sure there's links in the show notes for everybody so they can go get to all the stuff, including to the Kickstarter, which has a obnoxiously long name. Well, that's normal. So I wish you all of the success, not least of all because David, who is our special flower, of kaiju joy, is in the anthology, but also because it's actually, I think it's kind of cool. So... I also love Pacific Rim, so yeah. So, all right. So, I think that'll do it.
All right.
Does everyone feel good?
Yeah. Thanks for having me on. I really appreciate it.
Absolutely. Thanks for coming on, and also for dealing with the technical issues.
Oh, thank you for dealing with that. I'm so sorry about that mess.
It happens. Cool.
Yeah. So, thanks for coming on. I just realized something awesome. If you have a giant hog monster and you kill it, do you know how much bacon you could make?
Oh my god.
Oh my god.
Endless supply.
It would be like if you've seen that YouTube video with the guys that like took the pig and they like wrapped the pig around a turkey with a duck inside it and like
epic meal time.
Glue. Yeah. Yeah. That thing. Oh.
So clearly the sequel is Bacon Rising.
Awesome. Well, we will see everybody whenever we do the next episode. But thank you again, Nick, for coming on and talking about the project.
Thanks, guys.
Yep. And thanks, David, you're on the show. But obviously, thank you for talking about your involvement.
Well, thank you.
Yeah. Perfect. And scene.
If you would like to send us hate mail on this episode or any other topics we've covered, you can do so in a number of ways. You can send us an email.
SkiffyandFanty@gmail.com.
You can send us a tweet.
@SkiffyandFanty.
Leave a comment on the blog.
SkiffyandFanty.com.
Go to Google+.
Shawnee Jen.
And or Facebook.
The Skiffy and Fanty Show. Our intro music comes from Time Flux by Revolution Void. You can check them out at freemusicarchive.org.
Another weak human afraid to face death.
I fart in your general direction.
France, different planet.
The Force will be with you. Always.
End of line.